Today's Washing Tech episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at washingtech.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And also Warby Parker. Get a free 5-day home try-on at warbyparkertrial.com/joe. 5 pairs, 5 days, and the try-on is 100% free. That's warbyparkertrial.com/joe.
We need more clear guidelines on how, what checks and balances and controls and accountability we need to put in place when algorithms are automating these human biases at scale.
Welcome to the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast. We deliver the latest tech policy news and brightest tech policy experts to you. Wherever you are, so you can stay productive, relevant, and informed in less time. From Washington, D.C., it's the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast with Joe Miller.
An Amazon shareholder effort to rein in the company's facial recognition technology fails. The U.S. spy chief warns executives about China, and Kriti Sharma is my guest. Two Amazon shareholder resolutions to curb recognition with a K. The company's facial recognition platform failed to garner shareholder approval last week. One proposal would have required the company to determine whether the technology violates civil liberties before rolling it out to law enforcement. The other resolution would have required Amazon to conduct a study of human rights violations posed by recognition. While Amazon is reluctant to address these issues, Google and Microsoft have pledged not to sell their facial recognition to law enforcement. The Financial Times reports that U.S. National Security Advisor Dan Coats has been warning U.S.-based companies about doing business with China. Coats has even gone as far as sharing classified info with executives. The classified briefings come amidst a U.S. trade war with China, which includes a ban of China-based tech company Huawei from doing business in the U.S. because of a cozy relationship it allegedly had with Iran and the fact that China is alleged to be using the company's components to spy on the U.S. The Financial Times says the briefings have largely focused on the espionage and intellectual property threats China allegedly poses. A bipartisan bill introduced by Senators Ed Markey and John Thune last week that would slap robocall offenders with a fine of $10,000 per call passed the Senate with a vote of 97-1 on Thursday. The legislation also increases penalties for scammers and works to combat number blocking. The bill is called the Telephone Robocall Abuse Criminal Enforcement and Deterrence TRACE Act and now heads to the House, where Democrat Frank Pallone's got a similar bill in the works. Finally, Google has tweaked its policy for abortion ads after several misleading abortion ads showed up on the platform. Now the company's saying it will certify advertisers who want to place abortion-related ads as either abortion providers or non-providers. Any advertiser that doesn't fall into one of those categories won't be able to run abortion ads on Google anymore. Events. AT&T and Carnegie Mellon have a live stream entitled Privacy in the World of Internet of Things. That's 1 to 2:30 tomorrow, Wednesday, May 29th. On Friday, May 31st, we've got Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board presenting a public forum on the U.S. Freedom Act. That's from 10 a.m. to 12:30 in the Reagan Building. That's 1300 Pennsylvania Ave. That's, again, Friday, May 31st. And then on Monday, June 3rd, we've got a Consumer Advisory Committee meeting at the Federal Communications Commission. That's at 9 a.m. And the FCC, of course, is located at 445 12th Street Southwest. And you can find links to all of these stories, plus the events, in the show notes and also in our Twitter feed. And our handle is at Washing Tech. Stay with us. Audible's offering a free 30-day trial, and you can access it wherever you are. Hopefully that's at the beach. Actually, today it's raining in D.C., in the D.C. area, so hopefully you're in proximity to the beach. So while you're waiting for the rain to stop, Check out Automating Inequality by Virginia Eubanks. You can download Automating Inequality free by trying audible.com. Sign up for your free audiobook and 30-day trial today at washingtech.com/book.
Tech policy is global policy. This is the Washing Tech Policy Podcast, serving the world.
My guest today is Kriti Sharma, CEO of AI for Good, an organization creating the next generation technology for a better, fairer world. She's an artificial intelligence expert and leading global voice on ethical technology and its impact on society. She built her first robot at age 15 and has been building innovative AI technologies to solve global issues from productivity to inequality to domestic abuse ever since. Kriti was recently named in the Forbes 30 Under 30 list and was included in the Recode 100 list of key influencers in technology in 2017. She was invited as a civic leader to the Obama Foundation Summit. She is a Google Anita Borg scholar and recently gave expert testimony on AI policy to the UK Parliament in the House of Lords. Kriti Sharma. Kriti, welcome.
Hi, I'm really happy to be here, Jay.
So I think, and maybe I should just speak for myself, but I kind of, you know, go through the day-to-day, right? I have some general idea about how my data is being used, maybe more than some because I work in the policy world, but I can't say that I know who exactly is looking at my data and what it's being used for. Would you say that's a problem for a lot of folks? Do you see people caring enough about this issue? And what are some ways that we should be thinking about this?
With regards to access to our data and its usage, I definitely think that there's a lot more awareness of this issue now than we ever had before. There have been some legislative changes like the introduction of data protection regulation, GDPR, and also some of the more recent news headlines where we've started to understand the impact of mass accumulation of data. So at a data level, yes, absolutely, a lot more awareness today than we had before. But a bigger gap is what's happening with that data, particularly by the use of automated systems. For example, algorithms and artificial intelligence, where it's not just accessing data, but what we do with it. And that's where we need to do a lot more work with regards to developing new policy decisions. And some examples of that is our digital footprints when we're searching for information online or going through social media posts and even looking for new jobs, our digital footprint and decisions are being made in many cases, by artificial intelligence. And it's not just the digital world, it's the physical, social world as well. For example, in the criminal justice system, policing, interacting with local governments, IDs, crossing borders, and where algorithms are making a lot of decisions, whether or not you get a loan approved for your next car you want to buy or how much you pay for your health insurance. And these are the decisions where it's more about the impact of what's happening with the data. And when algorithms are making these decisions at scale, it starts to create questions around how do we govern that and what kind of policies need to be put in place. And so a way to think about it would be the applications and who's creating these algorithms, how is this data being used in it, and what's being done with it, and what levels of transparency needs to be built in.
You know, as a civil rights lawyer and someone who's worked in the civil rights space for quite some time, we often talk about the 1960s as a time when we were addressing, you know, overt discrimination, segregation in schools and on buses and in public facilities. Mm-hmm. And now we've been grappling with this idea of proxies for discrimination. So one of the things that's bubbling up now is how college admissions are handled in the U.S. And, you know, they don't necessarily discriminate on the basis of race explicitly, but they use merit factors instead. And the way they use them perpetuates some of those disparities. How would you say that AI falls into the category of being sort of a proxy for traditional discrimination? And what's an example of AI being used to perpetuate that bias? If humans did the same thing, you know, maybe we'd be sued, but if AI does it, seems like AI's not being held accountable. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a very interesting point and something I see a lot in my work on designing ethics and policy for AI and as an AI technologist myself. We're starting to see algorithms almost automating the human biases that exist today. And let's take an example of recruitment. A lot of us, when we apply for jobs, we go on a website, upload our CV, and these days is a huge area of investment in the field of recruitment AI, where algorithms are matching the right candidate to the right job. And in many cases, we're seeing a lot of bias that exists in humans because algorithms are learning from historical data, and that's how AI is being trained. And if I were to find out who's more likely to be a great CEO or a very successful manager or technologist, chances are, if I look at historical data, it's more likely to be a male candidate. And the algorithm starts to learn this bias and filters out female CVs. And now the algorithm is sexist. And to your point earlier, yes, we have rules and systems in place for humans who are making these biased decisions and are discriminating on certain factors. But now when algorithms are starting to do that, we need more clear guidelines on how, what checks and balances and controls and accountability we need to put in place when algorithms are automating these human biases at scale. And it becomes even more dangerous, I would say, when AI is being used in areas like, such as the criminal justice system, predicting where crime is going to happen, and in some cases even who the perpetrator might be, looking at even in the local authorities and local governments and how they are dispensing their services. And whilst, yes, AI has huge promise to help us become a more efficient, more fairer society, we have to be very careful in how we do that, because ultimately, I would love for it, as a technologist myself, I would love to see a net positive impact on society.
And you mentioned briefly the way AI perpetuates gender roles and gender stereotypes. What are some examples of that?
Yeah, that's a great point. There's a very well-known issue that there are not enough women working in the field of technology, and this reflects in the tech products that we create. But when it comes to AI in particular, the numbers are much worse. Only 12% of the workforce in machine learning, AI, data sciences is women, which creates a huge problem that the products we are creating, the algorithms we are building, can often be quite biased and sexist in many cases. And a very prominent example of that came from a study at MIT Media Lab, where they analyzed mass publicly available facial recognition systems and found that the error rate for lighter-skinned men is 1%, but for darker-skinned women, it's 35%. And that's because the algorithms are trained to understand faces of white men. And so when it's fed faces of people who don't look quite the same, the error rate is much higher. And the same technology is being used in applications all around us, whether you're trying to log into a banking system or when you're trying to cross borders, and in many cases, even in the criminal justice system, predictive policing, and social justice. So that these are the issues that compound. The second area of challenge is in the design of these technologies. And a few years ago, when I was building another AI system, which was interacting with humans, it was like a robot companion, the first decision we made was to not give a female name to the system. And that was a very interesting choice at the time, and did create quite a big wave in the community, because at the time, and even today to a large extent, all of these AI assistants have female personalities of very gendered names and voices, like Siri, Alexa, Cortana, even the Google Assistant. They all have default female voices of very feminine personalities. And that's because it's designed by predominantly white male communities, and there's some women too, but it just reinforces gendered stereotypical behaviors. And these assistants are being used to do tasks like switching your lights on and off and ordering your shopping and playing your favorite music. You get male AI too, that's making important business decisions like IBM Watson and Salesforce Einstein. So you see a lot of reinforcement of human gender decisions. Having said that, there's also huge opportunity to challenge things and create AI that actually develops and provides a more fairer society. Last year, I launched a project in South Africa called Rainbow that helps women who are facing domestic violence. And these are people, one in three women who are facing violence in their own homes from their own partners. And it's the biggest reason for the murder of women, female femicide, and it's an issue that's hugely stigmatized. And there's a lot of victim blaming and judgment, and nobody talks about it. So we built the almost a reverse version of an AI that helps to be more proactive rather than reactive. And the result was that in the first 100 days of launch, we managed to help over 200,000 interactions of people who are at risk of domestic violence, and to be more proactive, help them understand what the various causes are, what their rights are.
That's fantastic.
So it can be an awesome force for good.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And we've had other episodes on the use of tech in domestic violence situations, and there's definitely some great things happening there. What's another area of AI that policymakers aren't thinking about, Kriti? What are some of the AI bias trends that you see percolating out there that listeners can kind of get a jump on learning about?
Two areas. First up is skills. Who are the people who create this AI? Because one of the big areas of fixing the bias, big solutions to fixing bias is giving AI diverse data sets and creating guidelines and frameworks, but also, most importantly, skills and the people who create this technology. And that's where a huge amount of effort needs to go in. I strongly believe that the future of our society, the most powerful technology of our times, should not be created just by geeks like myself. We need to bring people from diverse backgrounds into these teams. These are people who understand the legal system, they are ethicists, they're policymakers, they are anthropologists, sociologists, linguists, and they truly understand society and working alongside technologists and developers and data scientists. And that's the kind of community we should create and redefine who an AI technologist looks like. And that's where a lot of effort needs to go. The tech industry and people like myself need to do a better job at explaining and communicating what this is and collaborating with people from different fields. When it comes to bias in particular, I think, again, going back to my point about underrepresentation, we need to make sure that we are upskilling the right people. And with any new wave of technology, any new industrial revolution, there are always winners and losers. There are new jobs that are being created, but in the short term, a lot of jobs are automated. We need to make sure that the new jobs that are being created are provided to the right people at the right time, and that we give the opportunities to a broader fragment section of society. I'll give you an example. Last year, I started a new project to train young people into AI and helping them prepare for jobs of the future that don't even exist today. And some of the lessons we learned were pretty shocking, in that these young people are currently not getting the right skills in schools. They do learn some coding, but nowhere near the opportunities that AI can provide, and they often self-select to opt out because they think they're not smart enough or they're not going to the right schools, and that there are some perceptions about how this working in this field looks like. And so we brought these capabilities and these opportunities to learn and prepare for these new jobs that are going to be created to the most disadvantaged members of society. And we found that the solutions that these people create are amazing. They're building programs and AI algorithms to help address challenges related to climate change, to universal health care, to education, to women's rights, inequality. And that's what gets me very excited. And this is what all of us should be striving for, making sure that young people have the right opportunities to thrive in this world.
We need to do that in DC and make AI more responsive to local communities, as opposed to thinking nationally, like perhaps they do in Silicon Valley, and more of a consumer context, local communities implementing some of what you've taught us through your work would be helpful to address some of these disparities that we've been seeing for many, many, many decades now. Well, thanks, Kriti, so much for your time. This is a fascinating area, but tough to move on because of the constant political quagmires we keep falling into legislatively and politically. But hopefully we'll get some traction here soon. Now let's turn to your icebreaker, your career advice, and your book pick. Okay, so it's time for this week's icebreaker question. If you could go back in time and meet any one person, whom would it be and why?
I would love to meet Ada Lovelace, fantastic computer programmer, an inspirational woman. And I used to think I'd like to meet some prominent scientists, but I've just been fascinated by her. She is a mathematician and has built some of the early interventions that define what algorithms are today. And what I would love to learn from her is obviously more about her love for mathematics, but also being a pioneer in this field and being a woman, and also making sure her voice was heard and her contribution to this field was recognized, and the experience she went through during that time.
Give us your secret, because you're so productive. You've done, I don't know, 3 or 4 TED Talks. One of them has over 1 million views. What's your secret? What's like that secret that you know that you feel like maybe other folks don't know about that makes you a thought leader? What keeps you going?
I don't have one secret, but
I'm a
very advice-giving person.
Right.
But I think one point that I've always embedded in my life since I was a little kid is experimentation and imagination. I love to do things that are not the traditional path. I love collaborating with people in fields that I know nothing about. For example, the work I'm doing on domestic violence, we're doing another big project on sex education in India, where we're giving information on reproductive rights and rights related to young people's bodies in an environment which is not politically quite favorable to do this kind of work. I just love collaborating with people from very different sides of the world and finding a common language and working together. And I think this is where new ideas emerge and we make greater progress in our fields. So my advice would be experiment and partner with the wildest, craziest fields that you know not very much about, but are very curious to learn from.
Now, I usually ask a question about what people are reading these days, and I realize, though, that people are watching more shows than they're reading books. But if you're reading books, fine. Give us a book recommendation. If not, maybe there's a show you're watching that's been fascinating to you lately.
I am reading a great book. It is called Automating Inequality. And I find the book absolutely fascinating because of some of the new work that I'm doing in the UK and policy recommendations around AI in predictive policing, crime and justice, that sort of area. I just think it's a fascinating read for anybody interested in social justice, in policy and technology. The book is written by Virginia Eubanks and it's called Automating Inequality: How High-Tech Tools Profile Police and Punish the Poor. And I think I do have a very long list of books that I need to read, but I think that's one of the very interesting ones to start. I also am reading another one in parallel, and that is Winner Takes All by Anand Giridharadas. It's another fascinating take on how we are creating a society which needs to be more equal distribution of the benefits of some of these tools.
So what are some final takeaways you'd like to leave with us before we close, and where can we find you online?
So my big request and ask is that, yes, there are challenges associated with these new technologies, but do not forget that the opportunities are tremendous. Just in my own work in the last few months, we've managed to help over 1 million young people in India getting access to healthcare related to their sexual health. And these are things we were not able to do before we had access to this technology. So I would encourage you to think about the amazing possibilities we have in the future and make sure we bring the right people on board. And for those who are interested in connecting and finding out more about my work, do reach out to me on Twitter at Sharma_Kriti. And I promise you'll get a response from a human.
And you've been listening to Kriti Sharma, founder of AI for Good. Kriti, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Joe.
That concludes episode 187 of the podcast. Thanks for listening. Hope you're enjoying. If you have a 4-day weekend or a vacation this week, hope you're enjoying. Over the weekend, we had perfect weather. Today's raining in DC, but it's not too bad. You'll be all right. we can use a little rain. If you like what we do here, we'd love to hear from you. Please take a moment and head over to Apple Podcasts. Give it a review. It helps others know what they can expect from us and really helps us out. Thanks again to all of you for listening, and I'll see you back here next week. Take care.
Washing Tech.